There are many different chiyuvim of mammon. Some of them are a hiskaibis midah. The person borrows money, so he obligates himself to pay back the money. A person purchases some merchandise, he buys a house, he buys an automobile. So that's a hiskaibis midah. And then we have sometimes a chiyuv that the Torah imposes upon an individual. I caused damage to somebody. My wife had a baby boy, I have to give pidyon haben. That's a chiyuv that the Torah imposes. Here there's a big question in the Rishonim regarding the nature of schiras poilim. The Torah says that there's a special deal how you have to pay the poilim. The halacha says biyomatitin schara, you have to pay the salary on the same day. It's a din that only applies to schiras poilim. And then there's another special din that only applies to schiras poilim that the Rabbi Natam is quoted in Tosfos Rabbi Natam Hayaroga Lama Gimel Dinim Heim. There were three different halachas. That by schiras poilim, let's say I worked for the boss, and then he owes me $1,000, and then he says, he's broke, he doesn't have any money, take furniture, take svarim, take clothing, and he's going to give me worth, it's a used stuff, a brand new whatever, I'm not interested in that, he's going to give me stuff that's really worth $1,000. So the halacha says, Rabbi Natan quotes Gemara in the other Bob Metzia, that he cannot force upon me shove a kesef, even if he doesn't have kesef. The employee can tell the boss, you sell the merchandise and you give me cash, because the halacha says I have to pay dafkin cash. A love whom not say es nafsho. That's the halacha. The Rabbi Natan says, if I lent you money, by halvoa, so then if you have cash, you have to pay back in cash. I lent you money, so you have to pay me back in money. If you don't have cash, then the Gemara says, "Memori rashvasach pari efra." If the fellow owes you money and he doesn't have any money to pay, so if he has only shavu kesef, so take the shavu kesef. But the Rabbi Natan proves from the Gemara, if he has cash, then he has to pay back in cash. Then he says the third din is nezikin, that even if he has kesef, he's not mechuyev to give back kesef. If I caused you damage or my behemoth caused damage. So the Rabbi Natan shows from the Gemara of Bava Kama, I can pay you, if I pay in karka, I have to pay metav. If I want to give metalfalim, call me the metav, who everything has the status of metav. If I want to pay cash, that's wonderful. If I give you a check cash, that's wonderful. But if I have cash and I have a check, I don't have to pay you with the cash or the check. So this is clear that Siras Perlam has its own special din, and it's its own parsha. It has a special din, you have to pay cash, you can't give shavu kesef. That's the Gemara in the end of Bava Metzia. And has a special din, the Yom HaTitzin Schar, which only applies to Schiras Poilim. Then Tosfos in first Perek in Kiddushin has another twist, another unique din that only applies to Schiras Poilim, doesn't apply to others. One of the Balei HaTosfos says that Shibud the Rav Nosson can't take away his rights to the money. Let's say if I owe you $1,000 and you owe the third party $1,000, the third party has a right to come to me and say he wants to take the money directly from me. Forget about the middleman. So the Tosfos has one of the Balei HaTosfos has a chiddush based on the Gemara that if I owe you money for schiras poilim, so he can't come to me and ignore the middleman. I have to pay the middleman the money. Schiras poilim has to go to the poil, and he can't jump to the other party. So we know that there were special dinim regarding schiras poilim, but the question still is, what is the nature of the schiras poilim? Which of these two categories does it belong to? Is it his chaybis midas that the balabayis accepted upon himself to pay the worker, to pay the employee the amount of money that they agreed upon? Or should I say no? Once the balabayis hires a worker and he knows that he's going to have to pay, so it's a chiyuv that the Torah imposes upon the balabayis. The Torah says the balabayis is mechuyev to pay. It doesn't, halacha lemaisa, it doesn't really make that much of a difference. In the Rishonim there is a discussion regarding kamla b'dirabanei, but it makes a difference in attitude. Should the employer have the attitude, I'm a nice guy, I agree to pay him money? Or should the employer have the attitude that the Torah imposes the chiyuv upon him? It's not that out of the goodness of his heart he agreed to pay the worker. The Torah is imposing the chiyuv on the balabais to pay. The Shulchan Aruch quotes the Maharam Rutenberg had a dream. He was always thinking and learning all day long. So at night when he was dreaming, he used to dream in Torah as well. So he once had a dream regarding this din, that if the boss doesn't have any cash and he wants to pay the employee in furniture and svarim and clothing, whatever, that's worth $1,000 that he owes him, So the Gemara says that that's not acceptable. So the Maharam Rittenberg had a dream where they told him that this halacha only applies if he's giving him furniture, svarim, or clothing. What if he's giving him food? Let's say the fellow works in a delicatessen, or he works in a restaurant, whatever. And then the boss owes him $100. So the boss, and the boss doesn't have any cash. So the boss tells the employee, what do you need the money for? A loaf and osea snapsho. He wants the money in order to buy food. So I say, take $100 worth of food. Take sandwiches, take tuna fish sandwiches, salami sandwiches, beer, soda, whatever you want, take $100 worth. So the Maharam had a dream that that is acceptable. But the whole reason why the Torah insists that the boss has to pay cash to the employee is to make it easier for the employee to be able to buy food. But if he's prepared to give him food, then the boss has to accept the food. So the Shach has an interesting comment when the Shulchan Aruch quotes that dream of the Maharam Rittenberg. So the Shach quotes the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Lamed, where the Gemara says, Divrei Chalom is lamalam alamarim. You should ignore anything that's revealed to you in a dream. The Gemara quotes a Tosefta, where a person died, and in the middle of Shiva, after the father died, so the son has a dream that if he'll dig in the backyard, he'll walk 100 steps north and 25 steps west, and he'll dig over there 100 feet in the ground, he'll find $1 million, and he should know that the $1 million is Hegdish. It's Hegdish, Amaisa Sheni, whatever. And then the guy goes, and digs, and he finds $1 million. So the halacha says he can keep the money. He wouldn't know about the money if not for the dream. And the Baal HaChalayim told him that in the dream that this is Hegdus. So Gemara says, Divrei Chalom is lamalam alamarim. But over here it was true. Doesn't matter. You have a right to ignore. So the Shach has this taina. Why did the Shulchan Aruch pasken like the dream of the Maharam Rittenberg? Very nice that he had a dream. He was dreaming and learning. But we should ignore the dream. It's interesting. There's another dream of the Maharam Rittenberg which is quoted in Shulchan Aruch. And the Shach doesn't disagree over there in Hilchas Mezuzah. In the Gemara, there's a discussion about a Beis HaKnesses and a Beis HaMedrash whether it needs a mezuzah. So strictly speaking, we paskin neither requires a mezuzah. You only need a mezuzah on a room that has a tashmish shel chol. If you have a yeshiva, you have a shul where they're learning Torah, they're davening, so you don't need any mezuzah. I remember when they first put up the mezuzahs here in the building, so Rabbi Reichman was making Rav Soloveitchik crazy mezuzah. The right side, the left side, this door, the other door, the other door. So after 25 minutes, Rav Soloveitchik said in Yiddish, so I don't understand anyway. He used to give the shiitaka in this room. So he said, I don't understand the Tachai Yeshiva anyway. What are you so medactic about putting up the mezuzah? The whole thing is only a chumrif and the Maharam Rittenberg. So Rabbi Rachman told him, Rebbe, they have college classes here. He said, oh, he says in Yiddish, I forgot all about that. I forgot that they had college classes, that they use it for Tashmish Shal Kol. If you only use it for Tashmish Shal Kodesh, so strictly speaking, it says in Shulchan Aruch that you're not chayvim mezuzah. So the Maharam Rittenberg had a dream. He used to learn in the base matters that didn't have a mezuzah. As the halacha says, you don't need a mezuzah. So he had a dream, three nights in a row, the angels came to him in his dream and he said, it's not right that you learn in the base matters without a mezuzah, you should put up a mezuzah. So after he had the dream three times, he put up a mezuzah, so then the next night he had a dream, they gave him a yashik koyach min hashamayim, that he put up a mezuzah. So this is quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, that a base haknesses does not need a mezuzah, and a Beis HaMedrash that's mainly used for learning, and people sit there and they learn Ashul, you walk in, you daven, you walk out. Beis HaMedrash, you sit there a whole day, and the Gemara says that Talmid Chacham is allowed to have a nibble of food, allowed to take a little nap in a Beis HaMedrash, because that will enhance his learning. If you tell me every time he wants to eat, he has to go across the street to eat, and every time he wants to take a nap, he has to go to the dormitory, so he's going to waste time another few hours going over here and going over there. So in order to enhance his learning, so we allow the Talmid Chacham to take a little nap and to have a little bite in the Beis Medrash, because the Beis Medrash is intended for learning. In the Shulchan Aruch, they quote the Ran's opinion in Megillah that that's only a Beis Medrash. If you have a Beis HaKnesses, you're permitted to learn in the Beis HaKnesses also, but the Talmid Chacham is not allowed to take a nap or have some food in the Beis HaKnesses, because the Beis HaKnesses, even though the Beis HaKnesses Kedusha is lower than that of the Beis HaMedrash, Beis HaMedrash is higher, that's the Gemara in the end of Megillah, Kedusha's Beis HaMedrash is higher, but still, the nature of the Kedusha's Beis HaMedrash is for the purpose of learning Torah Shabbat Peh. So there, it's built into the nature of the Kedusha that the Talmid HaChacham can take a little nap, and they can take a little bite in order to enhance their learning. But in a shul, where the basis of the Kedusha is not for the purpose of learning, it's really for the purpose of davening, so there they're not allowed to take a nap. So we understand the Maharam Rittenberg's dream. We understand it that a Beis HaKnesses, in the Gemara they're equated, Beis HaKnesses, Beis HaMedrash. The Rav Ritmerk had a dream that he should distinguish. The Beis HaKnesses is not Chayv and Mezuzah, it only has a Tashma Shalchol. And the Beis HaMedrash is Chayv and Mezuzah, it also has a Tashma Shal Kodesh. Why is it Chayv and Mezuzah? The answer is because in the middle of learning, they're going to talk a little Lashon Hara now and then. They're going to take a little nap. They're going to have a little nibble of food. So they use it for their own purposes also. Strictly speaking, the halacha says it doesn't make a difference. They're both potter. But there we do follow the dream of the Maharam Ritmak. So there the Shach does not take issue with the Psak of the Shulchan Aruch. There is a sefer that's called Shalos HaTshuvos Min HaShamayim by one of the students of the Rabbeinu Tam, who was also known as the Rabbeinu Tam. His name is also Yaakov. He was also known as the Rabbeinu Tam. And he asked in his dreams, he used to ask Shilas of the angels and he used to give him answers. Sometimes the answers are cryptic and you can't make out heads or tails what they answer. And sometimes they're pretty clear answers. In the recent edition, and the recent edition means around 50 years ago, of this Shabbos Shuvos Min HaShamayim that was put up by Rabbi Reuven Margolius, who passed away 40 years ago, I don't know, a long time ago. So in this recent edition, he has a long introduction about this topic of what value are these tshuvas anyway. Shalos tshuvas min hashamayim, that's the name of the sefer. We should say loy b'hashamayim hi. We should say divrei chavamis lamala v'lo maridin. Two arguments. So that's a question: to what extent do we rely on dreams when they tell us what the din is, and to what extent do we ignore them? Anyway, so here in Shulchan Aruch it's a machlokes, the mechaber with the shach, whether we should follow this dream of the Maharam Rittenberg if the employee demands that he wants cash. And the boss says, no, I'll give you salami sandwiches, I'll give you tuna fish sandwiches, I'll give you as much food as you want. So the Mechaber Paskins like this dream of the Maharam Rittenberg, and the Shach thinks that we should ignore the dream. The halacha says that there's a reciprocal obligation. The boss is mechuyev to pay the salary of the worker, but on the other hand, the worker is mechuyev lavad b'chol kach, he's not allowed to be lazy. And the Rambam in the last line in Hilchas Chiras concludes Hilchas Chiras with that statement, Chein chayiv labed b'chol koichoi. It's on page 1 in the sheets on the Maram Kaimis. The employee is mechuyev to put his full effort and energy into the job. Doesn't mean he has to go crazy and not allowed to have a coffee break, but he shouldn't have extra coffee breaks on that side. He shouldn't sit and talk on the phone to all of his other friends and relatives. They should do the work in the office. It's understood from time to time to have a coffee break, to make a phone call, that's Kemene Gamdina. But is mechuyev lavad b'chol koichoi, sh'ara yankev hatzadik omer aten yedatim ki b'chol kochi avadati es avichem lefichach not hol schar zois af bo'el amazel sh'am v'yitzir ish miyod miyod. Yankev became rich. Why did he become so wealthy? V'yitzir ish miyod miyod. Because he was honest in business, because when he did the work, he did his work be'emunah. Many people have the attitude, let's say they had a secretary who worked on a job for the last 40 years, and the previous secretary didn't know how to use a computer. So she typed everything by hand, and it took her forever. So she did 10 letters a day. And this new secretary knows how to use a computer. She can do 10 letters a minute. But she says, I'm getting the same salary as the previous secretary, so why should I work my head off? I'll do myself out of a job. Like this, I have a job, I work 5 days a week, 6 days a week, 5 days a week. Why should I use the computer and knock off all the letters in an hour? I'll take my time, and if they need extra, so they'll pay me time and a half. So that's the din, that you're not allowed to make such a calculation. You're not allowed to say, the previous worker, I'm getting the same salary as the previous worker. The previous worker was 50 years older than me, and everything was slow and done by hand, that I can do everything by machine quicker. You're not allowed to make such a cheshma. If you have the ability to put in more work into those few hours without acting like a nervous mishugana, acting like a normal person, to put in all of your work. Put in all of the time into those hours. The Mesilas Yesharim has chapter Yud Aleph in a sefer, is about nikiyus, about being medactic in all of the details of the halacha. So he speaks a lot about this din. He quotes various midrashim where the philosopher, Goyish, Greek philosophers came to Tanoim and they wanted to discuss issues of philosophy with them. So the Tana said, I'm a schir yom, I'm not allowed to carry on any conversations now because I won't be able to concentrate on my work. When I finish my job, come to my home later and we'll discuss whatever you want to discuss. Or Gemara, in the end of Tainus like that, a person has a job. See, even the Dvar Mitzvah, he quotes, it says in the Gemara in the Shulchan Aruch that the workers are not allowed to do Chazoros HaShatz. They should just, because they're taking off more time from the boss. Someone had a complaint to me years ago that in Manhattan there are different locations for minyan for mincha. So in various locations they have a chazaras hashatz. And in the OU office, where they're all rabbanim, they don't do a chazaras hashatz. I think by now they change it. So they don't do a chazaras hashatz. I said they follow the, I said with a straight face, they follow the din, that the halacha says they're not allowed to do a chazaras hashatz. It's not really true. You're not allowed to do a chazaras hashatz, you're not allowed to take off more time from the balabos. But if it's self-understood, they don't have so much work all day long, they have another 5 minutes. You are supposed to make chazaras hashatz. Or if it's self-understood that the balabos is moichal on that, so that I'm achieved to make a chazaras hashatz. So it says, l'mashal, the poelim don't say the bracha atei v'ameitin when they finish lunch. They say, b'ir rachma b'yushalayim amein. So why do we say amein if the benching is not over till the end of the olam ayichasreinu? The answer is, when you say amein, the workers are supposed to go back to do their work. They're not allowed to say the bracha revius, because the bracha revius is only midirabanan, and for the poelim, they relieve them from saying it, because it takes off another few minutes from the boss. And then the Gemara says also that they combine, the poelim combine the second and the third brachas. Hazanas HaKol, they say intact, and no, the Luchan Rachim, they combine together in order not to take off more time from the boss. So the Mesil Sushan quotes all this, the way there's a concept of gezel, and there's a concept if I steal your property or if I steal the time that I owe to you. If I agree to work for you 6 hours a day, whatever, 5-6 hours a day, and then from those 5-6 hours that I agreed to work for you, I'm taking off, I'm making a long benching. Or I'm learning by Daf Yomi. Or so he says learning Daf Yomi is the same as taking an extra coffee break. To have a coffee break, that's understood. The person has to eat food, he has to drink, but he doesn't have to have such an elaborate meal with such an elaborate birchas hamazon, with such an elaborate chazaras hashatz. So you see from the Gemara that they cut down on the davening, they cut down on the benching in order that the worker should put in the full time. If he has an hour for lunch break or 45 minutes, so he can have his chazaras hashatz with the long benching with all our achmans also. If he has an hour, so he has enough time. But if they don't give you off an hour, if they only give you off the amount of time that it takes to daven and to eat and to bench, so you're supposed to do it b'kitzer. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva where he discusses a fellow has a job and he's not happy with the salary, or they don't pay him on time, or in the yeshiva they're behind paying the salaries of the rebbes. So the worker decides, since they're not paying him on time, so he has the bravery to quit and go get a different job. He chooses not to quit. He likes it here, but he's unhappy why they don't pay him on time or why they don't give him the raise that he feels that he's entitled to. So therefore he's going to act slowly. So the Rebbe's going to come in late in the morning, he's going to leave early, he's not going to be so conscientious doing his job. So Moshe says that's against halacha. You have a bravery to quit. We'll have to discuss under which circumstances does the Rebbe or does the worker have a right to quit. But Kolzman, you didn't quit, you agreed to stay over here, so you have to put in your b'chol koichoi. He quotes this last line in the Rambam and Hilchas Chiritz. You put in mechuyev to do the work, b'chol koichoi. What about taka quitting? So the Gemara says that a poel yochal achza ba'afila b'emtza yom, if a poel agreed to do a job, he's permitted to quit even in the middle of the day. Why? Because the pasuk says, ki li b'nei Yisrael avadim. The Torah prohibits us from selling ourselves into slavery. A person is not allowed to sell himself as an eved ivri. Unless mamish, he has no money, he has no choice, and then it's a bizoyan, and it's really improper, because the pasuk says, ki li b'nei Yisrael avodim. We're supposed to be avodim as to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not supposed to be avodim to an eved. So even though it's not proper, it's not permissible for a person to sell himself as an eved ivri, unless he really has no brera, unless he has no parnasa, nonetheless, the halacha does not require that everyone should be self-employed. The halacha allows one to work for someone else. So the shaila is, well, if you work for someone else, isn't that also a form of slavery? So the Gemara says, not really, because of the fact that a pol yochal achzav afilu b'emtza yom, because you have a right to quit in the middle of the day. If the din would have been that the pol is not allowed to quit in the middle of the day, so the halacha would have required that everyone should be self-employed. Working for someone else would have constituted a form of avdus, and it would have been forbidden to take a job by anybody else, because the pasuk says ki li b'nei Yisrael avodim l'avodim l'avodim. So that pasuk implies that if you do take a job by someone else, which is permissible, it isn't even required l'chatchila to be self-employed, that you're allowed to quit in the middle. That din is quoted in the Shulchan Aruch. So now there's a machlokes among the Nesekelim on the Shulchan Aruch. What does that mean? does it mean the Torah, the real din should have been that a poel cannot quit in the middle of the day, because once he made an agreement, means that he's selling his services for that hour or for those few hours in the day, the week, the month, the year, whatever, to the balabos, and it belongs to the balabos. He's not allowed to back up like I sold my automobile. I rented an apartment to someone else. I can't back out in the middle. So here also, I rented myself out to the balabos. I'm mechuyev to do the work. So is it a special yotzei min hakal? The Torah gives me a break, because if I won't be allowed to back out, it looked like a form of slavery, and it says, ki li b'nei Yisrael avarim la'avarim la'avarim. Is it a special kula? In which case, it wouldn't apply if the employee is a nochri. Can a nochri employee quit in the middle of the day? Is it only kili b'nei Yisrael la'avarim? Only b'nei Yisrael la'avarim la'avarim. But if a nochri is a poel, he has no right to quit in the middle of the day. Or let's say, I want to quit in the middle of the day, I don't want to work for you, I want to work for someone else. So what do you mean? The Torah gives me a break, gives me the right to quit in the middle of the period of time that I agreed to work, in order to regain my independence, in order to be a free man. I don't want to be a slave. But I quit this job in order to work for another job which has better conditions, which gives better salary. So if the din really should have been that you're not allowed to quit in the middle, it's a special break that we give the poel the right to quit in order to be free, in order to show his freedom, but that's only if he's going to demonstrate freedom. But if he's going to quit in order to take a job by someone, it's going to be vayter and evet. So that's not covered with the pasuk. Or should I say no? This pasuk is just megala that the nature of schiras poelim is different from the nature of avdus. That schiras poelim does not constitute a form of avdus. So therefore, even a nochri who works, not that it's a yotzim in a club, not that the pasuk says you're allowed to violate the contract that you made. You agreed to work for a year. You're allowed to quit in the middle in order to breathe fresh air, in order to be free. The Torah wants every Jew to be able to be free. No, the pasuk is just megala that employment by someone else is not a form of slavery. So even if you want to quit in order to take a job by someone else, a nochri wants to quit, they can also quit. So this is a big machlokes in the Mefarshim on the Shulchan Aruch. Rav Shlomo Kluger, printed on the side of the Chosh Mishpat, has the Chochma Shloimei. So he came up with a chiddush. He writes a davar chadash that he never found in any pasuk. He always has original chiddush. So he comes up with this original chiddush, that yotzei min haklal, and it only applies if he wants to quit and be self-employed. But if he wants to work for someone else, not allowed. And then the Pischei Tshuva quotes others. He didn't have Rav Shlomo Kluger. He quotes others who came up with the same idea. And he says, it's generally assumed not so. It's generally assumed that the limud that's learned out from that pasuk is that it's not at all a violation of the contract. That there is no such thing. The halacha says that employment is not the same as slavery. That every employee has the right to quit the middle, even to work for someone else.
Maybe a difference for Numan?
The Gemara makes a distinction. The Gemara, the Rambam, Shulchan Aruch make a distinction between a poel and a kavmon. That a poel is not allowed A poel is allowed to quit in the middle, and a kablan is not allowed to quit. What's the difference between a poel and a kablan? A poel is one who's paid. My job is I have to work for these hours, or for these days, or for the weeks, or for a year, whatever. So if I'm a shubit to work for an amount of time, so that's called a poel. A kablan, let's say, is a lawyer. He gets paid $10,000 to do the job, whether it takes him 5 minutes, or it takes him all week long. That was made up in advance. Or let's say the guy's a painter, or the guy's a contractor. So I employ you. I say, build me a house, or make a closet in my apartment. We make up. I'm going to pay you whatever $2,000 to do the job, whether it takes you a week, or it takes you a year, or it takes you a minute. If you can snap your fingers and do it with a shem on farish, also, I don't care how long it takes you. So that's called a kablam. So the halacha also distinguishes. The halacha distinguishes between the two. So we assume that the poel is meshubit to work those hours. So he's like an eved. He's a little bit like an eved. And if he won't allow him to quit in the middle, he will mamish look like an eved. So that's why the halacha says ki libanei yisrael avadim lavadim lavadim. We allow the poel to quit in the middle, but the kablan doesn't look like an eved at all. He's not meshubit for any amount of time. It may take him a short time, may take him a long time. A fellow once told me about a lawyer, a businessman asked a lawyer, I need certain information from Washington. So So he said he's willing to pay $10,000 to the lawyer to dig up the information, plus whatever expenses it'll incur him. So the lawyer sent him, he gave him the information, and he sent him a bill. And the bill was $10,001.55. In other words, there was $1.55 expense. So the person asked the lawyer, what was the $1.55 expense? He said he made one phone call to Washington and he found out the information. He said, you could have made the phone call also. It wasn't even secret information. He didn't have to dig anything up. The guy agreed to pay him $10,000 to find out the information, whatever in addition to the expenses. So the whole expense was $1.55. And the schiris was, so that's mamish, he got $10,000 for only one telephone call. He made one long-distance telephone call. That's what the agreement was. That's called a kaplan. And a poel is one who gets paid because he works so many hours or because he works so many weeks or so many days or whatever it is. So the Gemara makes this distinction between the poel and the kaplan. The Gemara has, what do you do? Let's say the kaplan is not allowed to quit in the middle. What do you do? He does quit. He quits in the middle. What are you going to do? You can't force him to continue doing the work. So the Gemara says, we have to pay him for the, let's say he did one third of the job, he did one quarter of the job, now I have to hire someone else to do the rest of the job. So he is entitled, whether he had a right to quit, didn't have a right to quit, I still have to pay him for the amount of work that he did. You have to prorate it, figure out to what percentage of the work was done and how much is he entitled to. So the Gemara in Bav Metzias, quote in Shulchan Aruch, makes a distinction. It says like this, let's say he did one third of the job, now I have to get someone else to do the remaining two-thirds of the job, but the one who agrees to do the remaining two-thirds of the job is not going to agree to the same price that he agreed to. He agreed last year, and it took him a whole year to do one-third of the job. And at that time, the labor market was such that people were chalishing to get jobs, and they agreed to do work at a lower rate. And now, the guy's going to do the remaining two-thirds of the job, wants more money. So the Gemara says that psak will depend how much do I pay the first guy for the one third that he did. Do I pay him the full one third of the agreed upon salary? I said originally I'll pay him $30,000 to do this job, and he did one third, so I pay him $10,000. But he say no, the new guy wants $25,000. The old guy was going to take $30,000 for the old job, and he did one third, so I have to subtract $25,000 from the $30,000. I only pay the old guy $5,000 because it's going to cost me now from my pocket another $25,000 to get the new guy to do the two-thirds of the job. So the Gemara says it depends whether he's a poel or a kaplan. A kaplan had no right to quit in the middle. So if he quits in the middle, fine, I have to pay him for the work that he did, but I don't have to suffer a loss since he was mechuyev really medina to finish the whole job for the $30,000. So I'm not mechuyev to lose more than the $30,000. And since the new one who takes the job wants $25,000, I'm only mechuyev to pay the old guy $5,000. But a poel, since he has the right, halacha says he's permitted to quit in the middle, so he's entitled to the full $10,000, the one third of the work. It's going to cost me now $35,000. So tough luck. So halacha says that he had a right to quit, and he's entitled to the full percentage of the salary that corresponding to the amount of work that he did. If he wants more, the Gemara has cases that sometimes that there are cases that yes, and it's a big shaila and tesis in Kiddushin Ches on the base that's in the next in the Mar Mekayim is to tesis has two pshat and what that Gemara means. When can you make him pay more than he was supposed to get in the first place? Yeah, it's a big shaila when that din applies. Yeah, this halacha that the poel has a right to quit in the middle, there are limitations. Let's say I hired a roofer to tar my roof to fix it because they expect it to snow. And if it's going to snow, it's going to leak in, it's going to ruin all the furniture, it's going to ruin all the books, it's going to ruin the whole apartment, everything is going to get ruined. So the guy is supposed to fix my roof. Then he calls me up the last minute. It's going to snow tonight. Calls me up the last minute and it's not shaykh, I should get another worker. He calls up last minute, he says, sorry, I changed my mind, I'm not going to do it. So the Gemara says, if it's a dog ha'avid, he has no right to back out. He's going to cause me a hefsid, he has no right to back out. I can get someone who's going to fix the roof. I'll get someone to come in from Philadelphia. Yeah, New York, all the roofs are falling apart. Philadelphia, the roofs are okay, but the guy's going to come in from Philadelphia, he's going to charge me much more. So the halacha says that the worker has no right to quit in an instance of a davar ha'avid. So in Shulchan Aruch, the Ramo points out that a malamed who wants to quit in the middle is considered the Ramo has two examples. In the days of the Balei HaTosfos, they didn't have big businesses, but they have where they have so many employees. So the only situation of an employer-employee relationship was a parent hired a Rebbe, a Malamed, to teach his son. Everybody else was self-employed. Rashi made wine, the Rabbi Nathan was a moneylender. They didn't have anybody working for them. So the only case that they talk about in the Shulchan Aruch of somebody working for somebody else was a Malamed. He's teaching Torah to the other one's child. So in Shulchan Aruch, or a Sefer, one is copying over a Sefer. A guy is hired to copy over a Sefer. So the Ramo has these two cases. He says, if I paid someone to copy a Gemara, I paid someone to write all the Chiddush HaRamban. So he says, if he's going to quit in the middle, and then I'm going to get someone else to write the second half of the Ksav Yad of the Chiddush HaRamban, there's going to be written in two different handwritings. So it takes you a long time till you figure out the unique handwriting of each person. Each guy has his own way of writing a gimel and a hey and a nun. So if you have a manuscript that's going to be written in two different kisveyad, that's called the davar ha'avid. That's not right. If lechatchila I wanted one sofer to write the whole manuscript, what if lechatchila I hired two sofers? I say I want you to write the first half and I want him to write the second half. So the boss demonstrates, the balabais demonstrates, he doesn't care if it's written in two handwriting. See, he'll be able to suffer along. So then the first sofer can quit in the middle, it'll be written in three handwritings. I'll let the second guy write, instead of half of this Ksav Yad, let him write three quarters of the Ksav Yad, or four fifths of the Ksav Yad. Then it's not a davar ha'avid. But if originally the balabas hired the sofer to copy over a whole manuscript, and then he's going to quit in the middle and say, go get someone else to write it, that constitutes a davar ha'avid, that's not permissible. Because people usually, normally, would not want two different sofers. Or if a malamed is going to quit in the middle, so who's going to be teaching the children? So that's not fair. Unless he quits in such a way, he gives them sufficient notice in advance. He says in April, I'm going to leave for next year, I'm not going to come back. And go get yourself a different malamed. So he gave them enough time, or he wants to quit in the middle of the year. So he gives them 2 months' notice. Sometimes 2 months' notice is not good enough, because all the good malamedim have jobs. Anybody who doesn't have a job in the middle of the year is probably a lousy malamed. He would have gotten a job. So it's not really enough. Sometimes 2 months' notice is not enough. Unless it's an yeshiva like here, so they can replace, they have guys in the kollel, so you get someone, they'll give you 2 months to pick out one of the older guys in the kollel to say this year, okay, so the world doesn't come to an end. But you have to give enough time. The Ramo got that from the Gemara in Bava Metzia. The end of Bava Metzia, the Gemara has a discussion here in the Mar Mekaymus, it's number 11, Bava Metzia is Daf Kuf Tes. The Gemara says, let's say I have a secretary, let's say I have someone's doing a job for me, a painter or something. And the secretary, I'm not satisfied with the way they type letters. So I have to tell them a few times, please do the letters like this, and send out the bills like that, and do it like this. And if I'm not satisfied with the way you do the work. And if I give them a warning once, twice, and three times, and they still don't shape up, then the Gemara says you have a right to fire them. But there are some people whom you don't have to warn in advance, that if they're not doing a good job, because it's a pseida, l'achrini, it's a davar ha'avid, so therefore you can fire them without any warning. So one of those people is the malamed. If you have a malamed, he's not giving a good shear. Either because he's yawning, he's half asleep, he stays up late at night, or he doesn't prepare, or he doesn't know how to relate to the talmidim, whatever the case is. He's not successful in malamdus. So the halacha says you have a right to fire him right on the spot. You don't have to keep on warning once and twice and three times. The Gemara said the same doctor, the same amoyal. Let's say the amoyal doesn't do a good job. So he can butcher up the babies, or a doctor, he's not doing the surgery properly. So the patients are going to be sick, so that's a pseida lachrini. So whenever it's a real concern, like a malamed is considered a real concern, that he's ruining the children, a rebbe can turn off the children. So the Gemara says, you have the right and you have the obligation to fire the malamed without any prior warning if he's not doing a good job. So that's where the Ramo got this idea from. That's what the Mulnagoyim points out. The Ramo got this idea. The Gemara has the rule that a poel has a right to quit in the middle unless it's a davar ha'avid. But the Gemara doesn't give examples of davar. The Gemara does give examples. Davar ha'avid is he should fix the roof before it starts raining, or he should harvest the tvua and bring it in before it starts raining. That it's going to start raining in Cheshvan, and all the tvua is in the field and Eretz is going to get ruined by the rain. So that's an example of davar ha'avid. But the Ramo gives this new example of davar ha'avid, that a malamed can't just quit today. He just goes to the principal. He says, "I'm not coming back tomorrow and go fly kite." So how is he going to get someone to teach for tomorrow? You have to give him a week or two or a month or two notice in advance. So that's called Dava Avid. That's what the Ramo got that from the Gemara in the end of Bava Metzia. But the Gemara says you don't have to warn the Malamed. If he's not doing a good job, you have a right to fire him right away, because that constitutes a Dava Avid. This halacha that a poel can quit in the middle of the job, the Beis Yosef quotes the Ritva, who quotes in the name of his Rabbeim, that's only if he didn't sign a contract. What if the worker signed the contract? So shtar constitutes a kinyan to be koyin a karka, and avodim hukshul a karkoes. So this is also, in a certain sense, this is considered a form of avdus. That's how the Rambam writes. The Gemara says, "Kili ben Yisrael avodim lavodim lavodim." The being employed by someone else is not an avdus. So the Rambam says, "But it is." But it is an avdus. The Rambam has it in Shulchan Aruch, quotes like that. When you get to ono'o, let's say you're not allowed to cheat anyone in business. So let's say I'm going to sell a real estate. The real estate is worth $500,000, and I charge you $5 million for it. So that's a violation of ono'o. Or you're going to fool me into selling it to you for $250,000, and you know that it's really worth $500,000. I don't know. So if you fool, if we all know how much it's worth, and you agree to pay $5 million, even though it's only worth $500,000, or I know how much it's worth, and I'm going to do you a favor, I like you, I'm going to give it to you for $250,000, even though it's worth $500,000, that's not ono'o. But if one fools the other, whether the moicher fools the lekech, the lekech fools the moicher, so there's an isur of ono'o. Then there's, in addition to the isur of ono'o, there's also a penalty of ono'o. The penalty of Ainoa, the Gemara learns that from Sukkim, only applies to Metaltalim, doesn't apply to Karka. Because the Pasuk says, Chisim kermim kala misecho kono miyad amisecho. Miyad means davar nikta miyad liyad, something that you can hand over, that's Metaltalim. Then it says, Altonu ishisochiv. The din of Ainoa only applies if he's selling Metaltalim. So the Mefarsh Machum Mishayat, how can that be? The din of Ainoa only applies if he's selling Metaltalim. But the Pasuk says, that when you sell a land at Eretz Yisrael, you should calculate how many years it is left to Yovel, because when it's going to come Yovel, you're going to get the karka back. So you shouldn't charge too much, and you shouldn't pay too little, because he's only going to have it for the number of years to Yovel. So the example that the Chumash gives of Ainoa has to do with karka. So how can the Gemara come and make a drasha, akana miyad amisecha, davar nikta miyad liyad, it goes on the Talkalim, to restrict the din of Ainoa? It's against the Pasuk that's Mefurish. How can they make a drasha against the Pasuk? So the Rishonim say there are two parts to Ainoa. The prohibition of Ainoa applies equally to Karka. The original example is on Karka. But the penalty of Ainoa, where is there penalty of Ainoa? So the Mishnah says, if I cheated someone else in a sale, either I paid too little, he charged me too much, or someone charged too much. So if the price is off Shtus, exactly 1/6 off, how do you calculate Shtus? The whole discussion. Shtus is a range, it's not an exact amount. The whole range that's called the shtus. So if the price is off by a shtus, then the sale is valid, but the one who cheated the other one has to make good. He has to pay him the money that he cheated him. And if it's yes in shtus, then the one who got cheated has a right to say batel mekach. He has a right to pull out from the whole deal. I don't want to deal with you. You're too dishonest. I want to buy from someone else. So where did the Mishnah get these dinim from the Chumash? It doesn't say a word about any penalty at all. So that's what the Minchas Chinuch develops, a whole concept based on the Ramban HaChumash, because of this Pasuk. On the one hand, the Pasuk says explicitly the din of Ainoa regarding Karka. On the other hand, we made a drasha, Okona Mi'ala Misecha, Damarnik Mi'al Liat, Altonu Isha Sochiv, that Ainoa is limited only to Karka, only to Metalkalim, it doesn't apply to Karka. So the drasha of the Torah Shabbat Peh outright contradicts the Pasuk itself. That's where the Chachamim saw that there are two parts to the din of Ainoa. Explicitly, the Pasuk talks about the Yisr, and in between the lines, we're reading that there's a penalty, that there's a knas of Ainoa. The knas of Ainoa only applies to metalkalim and doesn't apply to karka. The same is true regarding hegdish. The Gemara says, "Ein Ainoa lehegdish." If you cheated hegdish, there's no penalty of Ainoa. So the din is hegdish of money. Shechila shav pruto. The hegdish is worth $100, and I pay a penny. So the Gemara says, "Mechulo," because ein Ainoa lehegdish. There's no din of Ainoa. So you mean it's mutar lachatchila to cheat hegdish? So the Gemara says, "Beferish not mutar lachatchila." The Gemara said, "Bizman abayis, and it's going to be upset al hegdish. You're not allowed to. Bizman is etz muta to cheat hegdish, because hegdish. What are you going to do? So somebody was magdish's house. I'm going to give $500,000, and then they're going to burn. Then they're going to destroy the money. Because what are you going to do with the money of hegdish? Someone's going to violate meila. If you sit and hold the money, actually, bana beis hamigdash, somebody will violate meila. So the Gemara says, if it's bizman azeh, It's not right to be magdish a building because someone's going to violate me'ilah. And if someone was magdish the building, you should be paid the building on $10, on $5, and then destroy the $5. How do you have a right to cheat hekdash? You should give the whole $1 million for the building. The answer is, ain't no oil hekdashes. There's no penalty. The Hatzilah is not right to cheat Hegdash, but Hegdash is not losing a penny over here. We're going to destroy the money anyway. So there's no mitzvah to destroy $1 million instead of destroying $10. Mar says, give $5, give $10, and Shon be paid. Strictly speaking, could have given a pruta also, but the Gemara says, that doesn't look nice. So make it $5. Gemara says, make it a little more. So the same is true regarding Nochrim. The din is Eina Noel Akum. What does it mean, Eina Noel Akum? You're permitted to cheat a Nochri. So the Mefarshim say it's not true. The Mishkanes Yankiv has a tshuva. The Rashash writes like that in Choris, the beginning of the second parak. He says, if you look in the Loshon HaGemara, the Gemara has a Loshon Lamisecha Atamachzor Anovi Atamachzor Anoel Akum. The Gemara goes on Hachzoras Aino, on the penalty. The Lav of Aino applies to Nochrim as well. We darshim from the word Lamisecha. The word amisech is memait hegdish, and the word amisech is memait akum. But it's not memait the hegdish and the akum from the yisur ainur. It's only memait from the penalty of ainur. Mishkanes Yankiv has a fascinating story that a Jew sold a boat to a nochri, and he charged 10 times as much as the boat was worth. And the nochri was gullible, and he went along with it, but he didn't pay yet. So he made the kinyan on the boat. And before he had a chance to pay the price, he finds out that he charged him 10 times the going rate, the market rate. So he said he doesn't want to pay that amount. So the Jew said, a deal is a deal. So he said, what do you mean? You're a ganav, you're a crook. What do you mean a deal is a deal? So he said, I'm going to take you to court. So the Jew puts on a straight face, I'm Orthodox Jew, I'm not allowed to go to court. It's not true. An Orthodox Jew is not allowed to take another Jew to court. But if a non-Jew wants to sue me in court, there's no prohibition for me going in court if the other tzadche kenegad is a nachri. So the guy says with a straight face, I'm an Orthodox, I'm not about to go to court. We have to go to a rabbi, didn't Torah. So the guy said, fine, I'll go to any rabbi. Anybody knows that cheating is not allowed. So they went to the local Orthodox rabbi, and the rabbi paskin, ain't I know alakum, that the guy has to pay the full amount. So the guy said, there's something wrong with this rabbi. Is there a bigger rabbi? How can it be? Anyone with an ounce of brains knows that it's not correct. So they said, yeah, Rabbi Yankala Karlina is the chief rabbi in that area. So they sent the shaila to the Mishkanes Yankiv. So he sent back, the rabbi was wrong and the goy is right. Eino Ainoa Lakum means that the penalty of Ainoa doesn't apply, but it doesn't mean that there's no prohibition of Ainoa. And the penalty of Ainoa is only a discussion after the goy already paid. If he would have already paid the price that was 10 times the going rate, so then the halacha would say, strictly speaking, the Jew, the ganef, doesn't have to give him back the 9/10. But the guy didn't pay yet. So you're forcing the guy to pay the amount of money. He says, the rabbi who paskin that the guy has to pay is in violation of Ainoa. Because the rabbi is forcing the guy to pay. So he's causing the guy to pay the extra amount. So he said, that's what the Rashash writes on the Gemara also. On the beginning of the second parak in Chayrus. The Gemara learns that from the Pasuk Lamisecho that we mamayit nochri from Ainoa. So he says that karka and hegdish and Nochrim, that are all excluded from the din of Ainoa, means that they're only excluded from the penalty, but they're not excluded from the prohibition. The prohibition certainly applies. So again, so there is a din of Ainoa that has two parts to it. There is an Isur Ainoa, then there's a penalty of Ainoa. So the penalty of Ainoa, that if it's Shtus, you have to reimburse him the amount that you cheated him, and if it's Yesem Shtus, the fellow who got cheated has the right to back out from the whole deal. He says, I don't want to deal with crooks. So the question is, does this carry over to the area? The Gemara says the din of Ainoa applies not only if you're selling an automobile, it applies if you're renting an automobile. Same thing if you're renting karka. Ein Ainoa le karkois, the penalty doesn't apply. Even applies if I rented an apartment. Let's say I rented an apartment and the landlord charged me way more than is the going rate. Or I fooled him into believing that he should give it to me for $100 a month and it's way more than $100, worth much more, and he didn't know. So the din of Ainoa applies even to renting as it applies to selling. And karka, there is no penalty of Ainoa. I'm a talchum, there is a penalty of Ainoa. So the shaila is, what about by employee-employer relationships? What's the din of Ainoa? We had years ago, it was a maisa here in the yeshiva. There was a great talmid chacham from Eretz Yisrael who was convinced to come to teach here in the yeshiva for a year. And he was a big genius in learning. But he thought he was a genius in everything. So he said to the members of the administration, I only want to come to teach in the yeshiva if you pay me the salary that I want. So they said, whatever you say, whatever you say. So he said he wants such a high salary, which was half the salary that any little Rebbe got here. He didn't know the hasagas in America. He didn't know what the going rate was. So the members of the administration said with a straight face, whatever you say goes. So they agreed, they're going to pay him the high salary that he wants, which was half the salary. So he was here for a whole year. The end of the year, they met at Seiskam Lashalom for him, a party, and he was a big knacker. He thought that he was smarter than everybody else. So finally, at the end of the year, he was talking to some of the other Rebbes, and he found out that he had agreed to take half the amount that everybody else. And he was the star. They took him in specially from Eretz Yisrael as a star. So the shaila is, what's the din in such a case? Is he entitled? That's what he asked for. But he made a mistake. It came out that he agreed to work for much less than the going rate. So what's the halacha of Ainoa by Schiris Poilim? Is there a din of Ainoa by Schiris Poilim? Is there a penalty that you have to pay? So the Rambam writes in Hilchas Schiris that we distinguish between a poil and a kaplan. He says the poil is basically like an eved. We give him a break, a poil yochel achsab afilu b'emtza yom, because if ainu yochel achsab, it look mamish like abdu, and that'll be a violation, kili b'nei tzol abon, but basically he's an eved. So the Rambam, as opposed to the kaplan doesn't look like an eved. If he can finish the job by one telephone call, he gets his $10,000, but if it takes him a whole week to do, takes him 3 weeks to do the job, that's what we made up in advance. He's going to pay you $10,000 by the job, not by the hour, not by the day. But if you get paid by the day, then you put called a poil. So the Rambam says the poil is basically like an eved. And an eved is hukish lekarka, so eino no lekarka. So he says, if a fellow is a poil, and he got cheated, either he cheated the balabas or the balabas cheated him, there was some misunderstanding. So the Rambam said, just like there's no ainoa lekarka, and there's no ainoa lavadim, evaktani hukish lekarka, so there's no ainoa for a poil. But a kablon doesn't look like an eved at all, so there's nothing to do with an eved. So by a kablon, there would be a din of ainoa. If they'd hired him to complete a job, they didn't hire him to be here for a whole year. We want you to be here every working day, every school day, you should teach whatever you're going to teach over here. If they hired him to complete a job, so then he's a kablon, so then it doesn't look at all like an eved. So then the Rambam says there would be a din of Aino. In the Shulchan Aruch, they have the Ramo has discussions, I think, from the Truma Sadeshin. What if I hire a balagola to take me to the next village? And I agree how much it's going to cost. So if the weather is nice, he gets there in a short time. If it's snowing and there's going to be big mud puddles, it's going to take him longer. And sometimes they're going to stop them on the road. Sometimes it should really take, let's say, 2 days. It may take a week. So we make up in advance how much I'm going to pay him. So that's a kablon. If we make up in advance, I'm going to pay him by the hour or by the day, then he's a poil. If he make up, I'm going to pay him by the job, then he's a kablon. So there's a discussion in the Ramah. Let's say I'm paying him by the hour or by the day. So he's a poil. And a poil, the Rambam says, there's no dinner of Ainoa. But I'm also paying for the wear and tear on the horses and on the buggy, on the wagon. So that's regular Schiris Metaltalin. So that does have a din of Ainoa. So that is subject to Ainoa. Let's say one fooled the other into either charging too little or too much. So then the Ramah quotes the Truma Sadesh, and you have to figure out, you have to calculate how much of the amount that they made up goes for the rental of the horse and the wagon, and how much goes for the Schiris Poilim to pay the driver. So regarding the payment for the driver, that the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch paskin, there's no din of Ainoa, because it's like Eved. And as far as the rental of the horse and the wagon, that would be that there would be a din of Ainoa. So the Magid Mishnah writes on this Rambam that many of the Gonim disagree on the whole thing. They say, Bechlal, there's no din of Ainoa. They say that Ainoa, the din, the penalty of Ainoa, the Isur of Ainoa does apply. You're not allowed to cheat someone else in making, fixing any price, whether the price is for selling or for renting, or for employing a worker to work for you. But the penalty of Ainoa, that if it's a shtus, it's machzer Ainoa, if it's yesem shtus, he has a right to back out, that only applies, that's when the Magen Mishnah quotes the Ramban and others who disagree with the Ramban, they hold that penalty of Ainoa only applies when you're either selling metaltalim or renting metaltalim. But if you're selling your services, that's not considered selling. that's not subject to the penalty of Einom. That's a machlokes. The Rambam holds no. Whenever you're making a ktsitsa, whenever you're assessing, fixing an amount, there is a din of Einom. I don't know what happened with that Rebbe at the end of the year. With his, he cheated himself. He got cheated himself. Let's say a guy takes a job and they don't make up in advance. It's understood they're going to pay him. They never made up in advance what the salary is going to be. It's not a smart thing to do. Then at the end of the year, at the end of the week, at the end of the month, they have a machlokes. So the employee says, oh, I thought you're going to pay me so much more. And the boss says, no, I thought I'm going to pay you so much less. So they all agree that he has to pay something, but how much do you pay? So the Tzeis HaChoshen quotes a Ritva, here in number 18 in the Marmikam, the Tzeis quotes a Ritva, says that you only pay Pachasha B'Poylem, you don't pay the average. Since we never made up in advance, you only pay the Pachasha B'Poylem, the lowest a worker would get paid in this area, let's say here in Washington Heights. How much would a worker get paid to do the exact same job that this guy did? In another place they pay more, in another place they pay less. No, it depends on this area. What is the pachas of a problem? You don't pay the average. The best is to make up in advance.
A person employed somebody else, they have to pay the
Same. The prohibition of Einor applies even if the person is a Nachri, just the penalty wouldn't apply. Ribbis also. One is permitted to take ribbis from a non-Jew, but from a Jew you're not allowed to take ribbis. Yeah. That's the thing. Even if you have two employees. If it's going to cause friction, so you gotta use brains. But strictly speaking, that's the din. Yeah.
How about onaf or applying for bar mitzvah? If you're working, your work is for a mitzvah, medicine, or even if you're about tzedakah, working for tzedakah organization, that kind of thing.
It's also a din of onaf. Why not?
Yeah, but if you're
serving, it should be called hegdish.
No. No, can your services be above and beyond since you can't put natural value. If someone's working for a certain number of hours per day and you're producing a product that you can put some sort of value on it. Whereas with a bar mitzvah or with a kosher nefesh, you can't assign a value.
But we know what the going rate is. We know how much rabbis are salaried, how much malamdim and yeshivas are paid, and we know how much doctors are paid. So there is a going rate. There's a pachash b'poylem, and there's some are paid more, some are paid less. There is a way to calculate the einor. Yeah.
Certain professions that, on the face of it, you'd say they're a problem, like a lawyer, because they go by case.
Right.
But you're always hearing people complain that they charge by the hour, like how many hours they put in. So they seem to mix in kind of the whole dimension to their profession. That they're working on one case, but it's sort of like as an expense, since they put in so many hours, they don't take one set fee for the case. However, like the way Rebbe gave the example.
You mean the fee is calculated based on a composite of two considerations, how many hours plus...
Right.
Plus for the job. Not sure. I'm not sure. It's good shot.
If you have somebody who violated Isser of Onah in the case of the legal class, is there some idea of what the Siddhi Shemayim is corrected or a possible Shuba is corrected?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's say a guy cheated a guy. So he did an aver. And there's no penalty. But if he wants a kapara, Mistama, he should appease the guy. He didn't avla bin adam lahavera. He didn't avera. So the guy doesn't have to be moichel him unless he satisfies him. So the guy can say, well, I will not be satisfied until you pay me the full amount that you cheated me. That's a consideration. It says in Shulchan Aruch that we're not done gzeilus v'chavolus bizman hazeh. The Gemara says in Perek HaChoivo that you need smuchim to be done gzeilus v'chavolus, and we don't have any smuchim bizman hazeh. And the ability for the bezin to function, this mandat that they're not smuchim, is based on shlichus zayil, and the chachamim only instituted shlichus zayil, and also the shlichus is by chisar and kiz, and I zeh b'chavolus it's lo shlichus. So in Shulchan Aruch, they quote from the Raivin, from the Tshuvas Hagoyim, the Raivin on the bottom of the Rif in Ksubas, and the Tshuvas Hagoyim, where they say, true, the Bezin cannot be done, Gzeilus Achavolois, but the Nigzal, or the Nechbal, can say, I don't forgive you. You stole from me, or you beat me up. I'm not mechuyev to be mochel you. I'm only mochel you if you pay me all the money that I'm entitled to. So then the guy has to pay. And the Bezin should supervise to see that he doesn't cheat too much. That the Nechbal and the Nigzal shouldn't ask for too much. He's entitled to ask for a reasonable amount, otherwise he doesn't want to be mochel him. Yeah, why not? So Nachmo, so there is a din that the poel can quit even in the middle. A kablan cannot quit and a poel can't quit. We made a distinction. What do you do if the kablan did quit? So there's a difference when you calculate the one third or the one half or the three quarters, whatever he's entitled to get. Do you give him the full percentage of the amount of the salary corresponding to the amount of work that he did? Or do you have the right to subtract the amount that he's going to have to pay the new guy? We only pay him the difference. So now again, yeah.
Would you be required to pay him at all? If he didn't finish the job for you, you asked him to do something, and whatever it was that you wanted done, it wasn't done, and no guarantee that another person can continue where he left off. If the guy is skilled in a particular way, he decides to do it one way that he's more familiar with, someone else is going to start up, like in software, so someone is going to, they have one handwriting, so they're going to have someone else to come in, but now they're going to do their handwriting different. You may not like it as much. The first work, why would you even pay for the first work?
Then it's the mechuyif to pay. In Safras, because it's going to be a different handwriting, that's called a davar ha'oved. So it's not right. The poel is not allowed to quit in the middle. But if he quits fafan, what can you do? So the only thing you have a right to do is if he had no right to quit. So then, if the new worker is going to charge so much that it's going to cost me more than I originally planned, so then you make the first guy pay for it. That's the only difference. See, itaki you lose out. So there is the Beis Yosef quotes in the name of the Ritva B'Shem Raboisav Shela Ritva, that this halacha, that the poel has the right to quit sometimes unless it's davar ha'aveid, this is only if they never made a kinyan. But what if the fellow signed a contract and he gave the contract to the boss, and the contract he agrees to do the work till the end of the year or for the next 5 years, whatever? Or if they made a kinyan suder, the boss gave a handkerchief, he gave a kli to the employee, in exchange for which the employee obligates himself to do the work for the next year. So whenever there was a kinyan made, so then the Ritva quotes Raboisav that the poel has no right to back out at all. The Shach disagrees, this is a big machlokes, the Shach disagrees with these Rishonim. And he thinks that it doesn't make any sense. He says when the poel starts the job, so the halacha considers haskolas hapu'ula also as a kinyan. Tchilas hamalacha is also a kinyan. And nonetheless, we learned that from the pasuk that the poel can quit afilu b'emtzayom, even though he started doing the work. So you see that despite the fact that a kinyan was made, the kinyan being the haskolas hamalacha, he still has the right to back out. So why does it make a difference whether the kinyan of sudar or the kinyan of shtar was made, or the kinyan of haskalas hamalacha? That's exactly what we learn from the pasuk, that a poel yachal achs b'afil b'em tzayom. So this is a big shayla halacha l'maisa, what the din is. Let's say a malamed in a school, is that considered a poel, or is that malamed considered a kablon? So the Ramah writes, it depends. In the days of the Ramah, they didn't have malamedim in schools. So he's talking about a parent hires a malamed to teach his children. So the Ramah says, he quotes the Rishonim, it depends what was the agreement. If the agreement was the Malamed should teach every day, 5 hours a day, whatever, a couple of hours a day, you give him a whole schedule at the beginning of the year. We want you to teach all these days. So that's called a poel. But if I tell the Malamed, I want you to teach my son Eila Metzias, and when the child knows Eila Metzias, then your job is over. So then he's a kablon, then he's not a poel. Rav Soloveitchik said, "B'shem Rav Chaim, that b'zman hazeh we don't have such a thing as a kablon. In yeshivas, the yeshiva doesn't hire me to teach the students Masecha Shabbos. They hire me to teach every day of the week. There's a schedule. I got to teach Sunday through Thursday, and so many hours, and to attend every day that there's school, and to teach. Every year they pick a different mesichta, but it's not that it's a kablon. I should teach Eila Metzias. I remember I had a teacher in college. I had Dr. Fleischer." One term he taught Paradise Lost, So it turned out that he finished Paradise Lost 2 weeks before the end of the term. So he said, that's it, finished. So he didn't teach the last 2 weeks. He felt that he was a kablon. That course only required of him to teach Paradise Lost when he finished the whole text of the Chad Gadgirah. So he was obviously didn't have to teach anymore. So Rav Soloveitchik said that by Malamdim and Yeshivis, we don't have such a thing. Let's say the Rebbe will succeed in teaching the Talmidim everything there is to know, Masech HaShabbos, in 10 weeks. So he doesn't have to teach till the end of the term. No, it's understood that every Rebbe and Yeshiva is a poel, is not a kablon. We don't have such a concept that a Rebbe and Yeshiva should be a kablon. But anyway, so the Shaila is, let's say, if you would have a Rebbe is a poel, and a poel can quit in the middle, usually it's a davar havik. So let's say the poel wants to quit in the middle and is going to give enough warning to the menahel of the yeshiva that he can get someone else to replace him. But what if the hanhala of the yeshiva had the Rebbe sign a contract? Or you have any employee, he signed the contract and he gave the shtar back to the boss. So this is a machloikis la'alocha. So the rabbis of Shel HaRidva hold that once a kinyan was made, the poel cannot back out. And there are some achrayim who hold like that. The Aruch HaShulchan defends that shita. He says the shach disagrees. He didn't wipe off the shita from the face of the earth. It's a machlekes. The shach thinks that it doesn't make any sense. And the rabbis of Shel HaRidva hold that it does make sense. The shaila had a paskin la'alocha. Rabbi Kivager, in fact, is assuming, like the rabbis of Shel HaRidva, that if a kinyan was made, then the poel cannot back out. And then he quotes a chiddush from the Mordechai, that the only time we require a kinyan is if it's a yochid. If you're employed by a yochid, by an individual person or two people. What if you're employed by a rabbim? Let's say the community hires you to be the head of a school. Or the community hires you to be whatever, youth director or something. So the tzibur, the Mordechai has a chiddush that a rabbim, not only a tzibur, a rabbim can accomplish a chalois kinyan without any need for a maisa kinyan. The Chazon Ish demonstrates this point from Mishnayos. He says there is a Mishnah in Orlo, Hanateel, a rabbim, there is a machloikis satanam, there is a din. If you plant the tree, so whatever pears grow, the first 3 years have the status of Orlo, they're also bachila, they're also mano. Pears that grow in the 4th year have a din of the revai, and then the 5th year everything is okay. No problem. So the Mishnah has a machlekes satanayim. What if the fellow is notel a rabbin? He's planting a tree, and it belongs to the municipality. It's not privately owned. Is there a din? Is it subject to the laws of our law or not? So machlekes satanayim. So the Chazon Ish asks, what does it mean? How to tell a rabbin? What do the words mean? A guy is planting a tree, and he's designating this that it should belong to the rabbin. So how does the rabbin acquire ownership on the tree? How do they? Just by his declaration. So he says, you see from the simple reading in the Mishnah that the rabbim is kind of without any requirement from Isaac Kinyan. Or he quotes a Mishnah in the Dorim, that there are two people walking on the highway. They're the only two going traveling on this highway, and they don't get along with each other. And one guy took a Gnum and Aneda, he's not going to get any Hano from me. Okay, he's not going to get any Hano from me. Then he runs out of food. He has no food, he has no water, he's ready to die. So he has to get Hano from me. I have a lot of food. I have a lot of food, a lot of water, but he's not allowed to take from me. So the Mishnah says, if I mafkir it and I put it on the highway, so then he's zechem and a hefker. So then he's not, strictly speaking, he's not in violation of his net. His net was not to get anor from me directly from me if I give it to him directly. But if I mafkir it and he takes it and a hefker, then it's okay. So then the Mishnah says, or you can do it in another way. You can take your food and your drink, the extra that you don't need, and designate that it should belong to the community. And then he'll be zeicha from the community. So the Chazon Ish said, how did you do that trick? There's nobody here from representing the community. There were only two guys on the road. So how did you declare that it belongs to the Nasi? It belongs to the Rosh HaKohol or something? So he said, see, if not Mishnah also, whenever you makna to our rabbim, to the tzibur, so no Maisi Kinyan is needed. So that's Chiddush number one that the Mordechai has. If you makna to the tzibur can be kinyan without a Maisi Kinyan. Then he has Chiddush number two. It's not only true regarding a tzibur, it's true regarding a rabbim. A rabbim means if you have a business where there are three shutfim, three people is already a rabbim. That's already a machlokes in the Gemara. Whenever there's a din of rabbim, how many people do you have to have? When you talk about rishus a rabbim deraisis, somehow you have to have shishim ribo. That's quite a big number. We're not talking about rishus a rabbim deraisis. That's learned out from the Mishkan, learned out from the Midbar. So that's the many rishonim say you got to have. They all say you have to have shishim ribo. Some say you have to have a wide street that should be roy Tezayin Amawai, that it should be roi l'shishim ribo. And others say you have to actually have the shishim ribo walking there on the street. So everybody agrees that you need shishim ribo, just a shayla theoretically roi, or actually lamaisa the shishim ribo. But if you're not talking about the hoitzo on Shabbos, which is derived from the Mishkan, from the Midbar, so then of course the concept of shishim ribo has no application. So let's say there is a din neder shuhuder al das rabim. One time, one amara holds neder shuhuder bar rabim. Whenever there's a din of rabim, so what's the definition of rabim? So the Gemara has a machlokes whether you need 10 or you need 3 people. So the Mordechai paskins 3. If you have 3 people, it's already called rabim. That's a Gemara. Let's say sofik tuma b'shus rabim is lahakel. So what's the definition of b'shus rabim? So the Gemara says in Nazir on the first daf in Perek Shneini Zirim, if you have 3 people standing together in a house, 3 people together in a room, it's called the b'shus rabim. For Shabbos purposes, it has walls, it's a Rishus HaYachad. But for Tumah purposes, it's learned out from Soito. So the Soito is a Sofik Soito. You go to Chumrah, that's because there's only the Eishes Ish and the man with whom the husband is Cheshed Ish is being Mezana. There are only 2 people in the room. If there would have been 3 people in the room, there wouldn't have been, it wouldn't be defined as Stira, she wouldn't have been a Soito. Soito means you have Kina and Stira. Stira means no one else in the room. If you have someone else in the room, it's not called Stira. So if there would have been 3 people, it would have been a Rishus HaRabim, and would have said Safik Tum Rishus HaRabim Lekula. The whole din of Safik Tum Rishus HaYachid Lechumr, as opposed to Safik Tum Rishus HaRabim Lekula, is learned out from Vinitmo Vinitmo by the Soito. That's how the Gemara says. Misoito Yalfinolo. So the Gemara says in Nazir that the definition of Rishus HaRabim for Safik Tum purposes is 3 people, not 10. In Gittin, and Daf Lamed Gimel, so it's a machlokes in the Gemara whether Neder Shuhuda Bar Rab, Neder Shuhuda Bar Das Rab, whether you need 3 or 10. So the Mordechai says we paskin 3. So Haraya, that the Gemara says that Safik Tum B'Shus HaYachid versus B'Shus HaRab depends on 3. So he says over here, not only does the Sibur Koine without any need from Isaac Kinyan, even a Rabim is Koine without a need from Isaac Kinyan. The Pasuk only says, if it's a yachid who's selling or buying, then you need a ma'isa kinyan. Kinyanim are only needed if it's a yachid or yechidim. But if it's a rabbim, and he claims that a rabbim is 3, then there's no need for any ma'isa kinyan. So Rabbi Kivege quotes this la'alocha on the side of the Chosh Mishpat, the first Rabbi Kivege and Simashin la'amigimel, that the alocha that a poel yachalach ba'afil b'em tzayam is only if he didn't make any kinyan. But if he signed a contract, he signed a Chose, or if you made a Kenyan suitor, then the Ritvos Rabbeisov say that you cannot back out. So the Mordechai says, not only is it true if they made a Kenyan star or a Kenyan suitor, if it's a Rabbim, there's no need for a Kenyan. The Rabbim is coming without any mighty Kenyan, so Mimele, this makes it impossible for the person who is employed to quit. In Shulchan Aruch there is a discussion regarding this din of Keli B'nei Yisrael Avodim L'Avodim L'Avodim, that a person is not allowed to sell himself as an Eved Ivri. Unless Namish is broke and he has no money, then he has no choice, he's allowed to. But if it's not a big Shas HaTchak, he's not allowed to. So what about to gain and to not to be self-employed, to work for someone else? Is there any Chash Yisrael there at all? So the Gemara seems to say no problem. That if he wouldn't be allowed to back out, if the din would have been a poel, not allowed to back out, then it would have been a violation of Keli B'nei Yisrael Avodim. And now that he has a right to back out, that solves the whole problem. That's the simple pshat in the Gemara. So in Shulchan Aruch, they quote the Mordechai, he quotes other Balei HaTosfos, saying, no, that's half of the story. The rest of the story is that you're not allowed to sign a contract to work for too long. What's considered too long? So some say, well, an Eved Ivri is Nimka L'Sheish. So anything less than 6 years is okay. But to sign a contract, 5 years would be okay. 5.5 years would be okay. 5.75 years is okay. But 6 years or more, that's already a violation of Keli B'nei Yisrael Avodim L'Avodim L'Avodim, even though you can back out in the middle. That's one opinion. Other Rishonim say no. They say anything more than 3 years is a violation. Would they dig up anything more than 3 years? Because the Pasuk says when you have an Eved Ivri and his Yotze B'Sheish, you should give him Ha'anokeh. Because it says, because he worked for you, kimishnes chasoche ravotcha. So what's the pirush amidus kimishnes chasoche ravotcha? So Rashi and Chumash says he was oved by yom balayla. A normal poyel, when you engage an employee, so he works in the daytime, as it says in Baruch Nafshi. It says It says that people, the Mishnah says in Bav Metzia, that the normal halacha says that you work from Los HaShachat till Tzeis HaKachavim, unless you designate otherwise, unless you say the hours are 9 to 5, or the hours are 9 to 3, whatever you make up in advance. If you make up otherwise, then Masna, Mashkos, Vatar, B'davishim, and Mammon is kind. But if you didn't make up otherwise, then the Mishnah says, we learn from the Pasuk of Baruch Hinafshi, that you work from Alos HaShachat to Tzeis HaKachavim. By the way, the Mishnah says, let's say the minig amokim is, let's say I get a job in YU and they say they're going to pay such a salary, and then I come, I work from 9 to whatever the hours are, 9 to 3 every day. Then at the end I want to get my salary, so the boss says, what do you mean? But you weren't here at Alois HaShach, he didn't stay till Tzeis HaKachom. So I said, what are you, crazy? Nobody works from Alois HaShach till Tzeis HaKachom. Everybody in Yeshiva works from 9 to, the Rebbe's work from 9 to 3. The others, the workers work from 9 to 5:30. Nobody works from Alois HaShach till Tzeis HaKachom. So the Mishnah says, Hakol k'minik hamdina. If the minik hamakam is that everybody works from 9 to 3, even though we didn't specify, it's kilu hisnu. If we would have made it tonight, so the halacha says, kol tanai shebimam and kayim. Masna mashkas matara tanai batal is only in Isavaheta. But in Dabashim imam and we paskin tanai kayim. So here, even if he didn't make it tonight, but whatever is the minik hamdina is self understood, it's kilu hisnu. So that's where the Yerushalmi has the comment on that Mishnah, that minik oikar halacha. That's the famous line in the Yerushalmi. The halacha, so the Yerushalmi explains, the halacha should really be amoytem achaver all of haraya. So the boss is muchzik in his money, so the din should be the employee is only entitled to get a salary if he can prove that he wasn't muchiv to work from alos hashachat till seis kachom. How can he prove? He can't prove it. They never specified anything. But since the minig is that all of the rabbis in yeshiva work from 9 to 3, and other workers work, the secretaries work from 9 to 5:30, and nothing was specified, so the minig is kaveya kilu hisnu, is itself understood. That is from 9 to 5:30 and 9 to 3. So that is oike the halacha, that takes precedence over the din of hamotzei mechaver olav haraya. Because the minig serves as the raya. That's what the achrayim say, that everybody quotes that Yerushalmi out of context. Minig tzibrechta din. If the minig is that we eat chazer once a week, so you can eat chazer, because the minig oike halacha. That's not what Yerushalmi is talking about. Yerushalmi is talking about dini mamanis. And dini mammon is that there is a din amoytzei mechaver olav haraya. You can only take money from the other person if you prove that you're entitled to it. Possession is 9/10 of the law. So the employer is muchzik on the salary that he didn't pay yet to the employee. The employer says, I thought you're going to work from alos hashachat till tzeis hakochavim, as the din requires in baruch hinafshi. And the worker says, what are you talking about? I never heard of it. The minig amokim is nobody works that time. So the minig is kaveya, that's a self-understood kilu isnu. And if hisnu, that would have been the agreement. So that's considered like hisnu. But you don't say minig oikar halacha in any other area outside of dini mamonis. This is the only place where you say minig oikar halacha. Whatever the minig is, that's considered kilu hisnu. So the pasuk says when the evidibi goes free, you should give him hanaka ki mishnas chasachar avotcha. So Rashi says he worked twice, Mishnah, he worked twice the amount that Evidibi works twice the amount that a poel works. In what way does he work twice the amount? So Rashi says a normal poel only works by yom, as it says in Baruch Hinafshi, from alos hashachat till tzeis hakacham. The Evidibi is avidus rabba by yom, avidus rabba by laila. He's avidus rabba by yom. He does work. He drives him around. He washes the dishes. He vacuums the rug. Whatever he wants him to wash the windows. Whatever work he asks the Evidibi to do, he has to do. Then it's avidus rabba by laila, rabba mosol shivchak nainus. If I have an employee, I have no right to tell him what he should do in his personal, private life. But if I have an evidibi, you have a right to demand of him that he should sleep at the shivchak nainis in order that I should own the vlodis. So Rashi quotes from the Tanoim, that's how they translate. He mishnas chasar avotcha, he worked twice as much as a normal poel. A normal poel only works by yom. The evidibi is ovid by yom or balaylo. So some rishonim, Tosfos in Masech HaShabbos, in the end of Shabbos, has another pshat. There's a Gemara in the end of Shabbos, he should be done, everybody lekaf schus. So the Gemara tells a whole story that different cases, that a fellow worked for another one for 3 years and he didn't see his wife for 3 years. He was away from his whole family, his wife and his children. At the end of the 3 years, he wants to go back to his wife and children. So he says to the boss, okay, my 3 years of employment are up, I want to go back home. I'd like to collect my salary. So the boss says, I don't have any money. Then he says, so give me some behemoths. I don't have any behemoths. Give me some food. I don't have any food. Give me clothing, doesn't have any clothing. And the worker can't believe it. How can it be that he doesn't have anything? So the worker was an idler guy, so he says, okay. So he goes home with nothing. After working for 3 years, not seeing his wife and children, goes home with nothing. Then a week later, the boss comes and he gives him all the money that he owed him with the Hanukkah and everything. He was a poil. He gives him all the money. And then he says, at the time that I told you I had no money, did you think I was telling you the truth? So the guy was a Tmimus Dika guy. So he says, yeah, I assume you must have invested all the thing in the market and you didn't have any money available to you. He says, that's the truth. That's really what happened. When I said I have no behemoths, you knew for the last 3 years I have millions of behemoths. What did you think? Tmimus Dika worker. So he says, I thought you must have rented out all of behemoths. That's what really happened. That's really the truth. And all the, he remembers he has no food, no clothing, nothing to give him. And he says, the worker thought he was done, Lekafschus, the boss, why you can't pay him anything. And the boss says, I swear to you that everything that you're saying now, that's exactly what it was. And now he pays him every penny. So the Gemara says, you should always be done, Lekafschus. Maybe that it's really true. So Taisa says, on that Gemara, how come the guy had an agreement of employment to work for 3 years? That's part of, that's a detail in the story. How come? So Taisa says, because it says in Chumash that the Evidiri works for 6 years. And that's described as Mishnas Chasachar Avotcha. He worked twice as much. So whereas Rashi and Chumash says twice as much means Avidus Rabba Bayomu Balaylo, that the Rabba Mosul of Shibchak Nain is, he has to work even in his private life, he's working for the Balabos, not only for Malos HaShachar, till Tzeisot Kochavim. So the Taisa says, but the Pshuta Shal Mikra means that Evid Ivri works for 6 years, as opposed to Poyol, that a normal Poyol only signs a contract for 3 years. So that's what some Balei HaTaisus say, to sign a contract for more than 3 years is a violation of Keli B'nei Yisrael Avodah. Others say it's only a violation if you sign a contract for 6 years or more. So that's why in Europe there were different minhagim. When a rabbi would sign a contract to work for a community, so some would insist, the Chasam Sofer, the Pesach Tshuva, the Aruch HaShulchan, they write these different minhagim. Some would insist on a 3-year contract or less, because anything more than 3 years is already a achshash violation of Keli B'nei Yisrael Avodim La'avodim La'avodim. And others would allow anything up until a 6-year contract. So what are you going to sign, a 5 3/4 year contract? So the meaning was they signed a 5-year contract. But to sign a contract of more than 6 years, 6 years or more, according to those who showed him, but to sign a contract of more than 3 years, many held was a violation. The Vilna Gaon says he doesn't understand the whole thing. The Taisa says on the Gemara, Pasha Pshat is, there's never, in employment, there's never a violation, because Paul Yachalach Lafid Ben Tzayon Fartik, that's the end of the story. But these Balei HaTaisus that are quoted in Shulchan Aruch, they say, no, that's half of the solution. The rest of the solution to the issue is that he should make sure that he doesn't sign a contract of too long. The Chasam Sofer writes in his Chuvis that this issue, 3-year contract, 5-year contract, this is only with respect to the, what do you mean? After the 3 years up, then the Kehillah has the right to fire the rabbi. So he says, of course not. The rabbi traveled all the way from Hungary to Germany to serve as the rabbi. So after 3 years, they're gonna, let's say they give him a 1-year contract. He spent more money, he invested more money traveling than he gets in the salary. That's ridiculous. So he says, the Balabatim don't never have the right to fire the rabbi because he invested so much money, came so far. And then he says, further it says that whenever a person is appointed to a position of Sroreh, so not only does he have the Sroreh to the rest of his life, the Sroreh goes over Birusha to his children, the Rabbanus is considered a Sroreh. So he says, the Balabatim can never fire the rabbi. There are more rights in Yerideya. In Hilchas Malamdim there, he writes about Sroreh, so he says, unless the Minig HaMokem is, let's say they appoint a Gabbai, or they appoint a Gabbois, or something like that, so that's a Sroreh also. So if the minhag hamokom is that they switch gaboyim every couple of years, so then the Sroreh Melech HaTchila was only until he ended at 2-3 years, not further. So the later poskim, the Sri Deish and the other poskim write that in Western Europe the minhag developed. In Eastern Europe the minhag always was that when they appointed a rabbi, he was a rabbi for life. And then there would be an esek whether the rabbanus goes over birusha to his children. So that was the whole machlokes. Avnei Nezer has a long tshuva about that, a famous tshuva. It's called Sheish Milas Lakise. There was a community where the rabbi died and there was a dispute between the son and the son-in-law. Who's entitled to the Rabbanus? The son-in-law was more Merutz of the Kohol. The rabbi has to be Merutz of the Kohol, but the son-in-law was more Merutz of the Kohol. So the Avnei Nezer has a whole tshuva which contains 6 units. There's 6 issues that he discusses. So the throne of Shlomo HaMelech, says in Tanakh, had 6 steps. So this tshuva has a title. Usually the tshuvas in Avnei Nezer just have a number. Tshuva Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dal has numbers. And this tshuva has a title because it's so long. It's Mamash, the whole country. Sheish Mavis Lakise. the six steps to get up to the throne, the Kisei HaRabbonis, this Nan Shleim HaMelech, the six steps. And in each section of the tshuva has a different title. He's going to discuss this topic. And then there was a big Talmud Chacham in Europe. I forgot his name. He was the son-in-law of the Slabodka Rosh Hashiva. So he was the son-in-law. He wanted to yarshin his father-in-law's position in the yeshiva when his father-in-law retired during the father-in-law's lifetime. So he wrote the whole kunchus of Heoris. He was a big godel. I forgot what his name was. He wrote this sefer on Rosh Hashanah. That's a very good sefer on Rosh Hashanah. Whatever. He was a great grind. So he has a very sharp, a little kuntres Heoris on this kuntres of the Sheish Mavis Lakis. So that's another discussion where the Rabbonis goes Birusha or not. Malchus goes Birusha. And Torah doesn't go Birusha. So that's a shaila. What's the position of Rabbonis? Is that considered Malchus or is that considered Torah? What's the main function of the rabbi? To keep law and order? That's what David Nezer thinks. It's to keep law and order. So he's like Melech. Man Malchi Rabbonis. What the Paskin Shaila says, not really. All the Shailas were already always get Paskin by the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch. He said, that's not really the function of the rabbi. So he thinks that it doesn't go Birush. He thinks that it should go Birush. He thinks that the main purpose of Rabbonis is to keep law and order in the community, not so much the Paskin Shaila. So he thinks, therefore, it's like a Malchus. A Malchus does go Birush. And others debated. Other Paskin held that Torah doesn't go Birush. Any Yerusha Hilach HaMishnah says in Pirkei Avos, Torah is not Birush. So why should Rabbonis go Birush? So according to what it says, the Machlokes, so the Vilna Gaon holds like Tosfos that it has to gomer. Oh, you can't quit. You can't even quit in the middle. It's illegal. Then you got a big problem. And, according to the Gemara, you're not allowed to. It's also to take such a job. If it's illegal to quit, then it's an Issa. Well, I don't know.
So nobody can join the army.
The army, you don't join. I mean, if they draft you, I mean, if they don't draft you, there's no draft. So people volunteer, and you're not allowed to quit in the middle.
Even the draft, still they're being, they're imposing.
The government has the right to impose whatever they want. They can make you an Eved also. So there's no problem. You can leave an Eved. The government has the right to make you into an Eved. But I'm not allowed to sell myself as an Eved in the first place. So to agree to a job that's mamash going to be an Avedus, that you can't quit in the middle. So that the Gemara seems to say is forbidden. I don't know. That's a good shout. Rabbi Soloveitchik once wrote a tshuva for Dr. Belkin in English about volunteering to serve as a chaplain in the army. He never touched on this issue. About he discussed a different issue. He may have to be Michal Shabbos, he may have to eat non-kosher food sometimes. So you're putting yourself into a situation where you may have to violate Mitzvah Sater. So he explained why that's permissible, because it doesn't. In advance, you don't know if it's going to happen, when it's going to happen, how it's going to happen. So he gave a whole explanation why it's not called Machnas Atzma, the Matzav Shel Sakonis Nefoshes, because you're not sure in advance. But this is a new issue. It's a very good Heora, I don't know.
Just to follow up, I understand why there'd be a problem with someone volunteers because you're vowing yourself to be a but what about in the previous generation where they had the draft? So Rebbe said in passing that you thought that'd be okay.
The government has a right to make me into an Eved Mamish, so they have a right to draft me and tell me I can't quit until they're prepared to let me go. That's not a violation if I go along with the government's wishes.
Because when you say you need an opposite meaning.
Yeah, of course. The Isser is, Gileben and Solabonim, you're not allowed to sell yourself as an Eved. I didn't sell myself. They require of me that I should become. So I'm not mechuyev to bribe people and to stand on my head and to pull strings in order to become part of them. If they require of me to become an Eved, so I'll be their Eved. I'm not doing it on my own. So again, so in the Shulchan Aruch, they quote this machloikis that some, the Hashulchan, the Chasam Seif, and others, they discussed that some would sign a contract, a 3-year contract, and some would sign anything less than a 6-year contract, namely they would sign a 5-year contract. So the Chasam Sefer adds on in the Tshuva, in the Pesachet Tshuva quotes, Chasam Sefer adds on, this 5-year contract, 3-year contract, this has only been a geared to the rabbi quitting in the middle. It's not right for the rabbi to quit in the middle of the 3 years or the 5 years, whatever he signed to. But as far as the Balabatim firing the rabbi, so the Chassam Sofer lived in Eastern Europe. So he says, and he lived in the earlier generation, but even Western Europe they had this practice. So when a rabbi is appointed to a position of rabbanus, that's considered a svara, and he has the svara for the rest of his life. The number of years that are mentioned in the contract, that's from the perspective of the rabbi. Is he allowed to leave them? So in the middle of the 3 years or the 5 years, that is not allowed to leave. But even after the three or 5 years are up, the balabatim are not allowed to fire the rabbi. That's what the Chassam Sofer says.
Why are you allowed to sign a contract
and then
you're not allowed to be
present? If you sign
a contract, then you can't be
present. Yeah.
So why are you allowed to sign a contract?
That's like a poil. Those Rishonim hold you're not allowed to back out, but that's a poil. The halacha says a poil is mutter. So they have the machlokes, what constitutes a poil? Whether anything up to 3 years is mutter, or anything less than 6 years is mutter. What happens if you have a worker who's not doing a good job? So the Gemara says you have a right to fire him. So he said sometimes you have to warn him in advance, a few times something. You have to warn him in advance. Yeah. Who is to determine whether he's doing a good job or not? So let's say he painted my house and he does a lousy job. I'm not happy. And the worker says, why, it looks beautiful. The painter says, it looks beautiful. So you have to call in experts and they'll determine whether he did a good job, didn't do a good job. Sometimes not so. Let's say the secretary types letters. And I'm ready to die. The letters look awful, full of misspelling, and there's not the lines are not straight. Everything is crazy, and the secretary thinks that it's beautiful. So you call in experts, and they say whether he did a good job or not. Let's say the Rebbe is teaching the Talmidim. So how can you tell whether the Rebbe is doing a good job, not doing a good job? The Rebbe thinks he's the best Rebbe in the world, and the Menahel thinks that he's terrible. So how are you going to determine? Are you going to test the Talmidim? A lot of times the Rebbe does a wonderful job. Talmidim don't understand anything anyway. How can you prove whether the Rebbe is doing a good job? So you have to have people who are going to testify to say that he leaves the class a lot and he doesn't prepare, comes in unprepared obviously, and he teaches them incorrect things. So who's going to say all this? So the parents are going to say, they heard from the children that the Rebbe walked out today for a couple of hours, and the Rebbe fell asleep on his desk, and the Rebbe this, and the Rebbe taught the children this, and it's not correct. It says in Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, not so. Yeah, but are the parents believed? The parents are the ones who are paying the money, and the children are ktanim, and the parents are negev bedorcha. And the menayel and the yeshivas, they're all bali dvarim over here. So they don't have their money. So let's say the balabat want to fire the rabbi. Why do they want to fire the rabbi? He doesn't prepare good drushes. That's what they think. Maybe he's gevaldig drushes. Who says? Maybe they're knockout drushes. Maybe they don't want to. He's giving them fire and brimstone, and they don't want to listen to such drushes. Maybe that's what's supposed to be. Who's to determine whether he's doing a good job or not? So the Chassam Sofer and the Maram Shik, who was a Talmud of the Chassam Sofer, have tshuvas about this. How do you ascertain? So they say the Balabatim don't have the money. So if they're going to go for a din Torah, the Balabatim don't have the money to say that it's obvious that the rabbi didn't prepare his drushes. And he said, Ashir and Shul, he didn't prepare because he didn't know what he was talking about. That's what they say. They're not Nemonim, they're the Baldova Shekinegi, they're the Baldin on the other side. So you have to have guests who are visiting, who don't pay the rabbi's salary, guests who visit in the community. So if they have a Din Torah and the rabbi will claim that he's always prepared, that he gives good to Rosh, so you have to have the outsiders who are not paying his salary, they have to come and testify that it's very clear that the rabbi didn't do a good job. How can you do that in the school? Who are you going to get? The outsiders in the school is very difficult. So the Mistame, Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein once pointed out, once discussing this at a conference of educators about this issue. So he said, usually when you get a job, so it's understood that you are responsible to the man on top of you, your administrator. In any factory, in any business, there's always one person who's in charge of the people who work below him. So usually when you get the job, it's understood that he has no manus to say whether you're doing a good job or a lousy job. So the umdin it probably is when a Rebbe is hired in a yeshiva, a teacher in a yeshiva, like anyone hired in a business or a factory, that the foreman or the one in charge, the administrator, has no manus to say whether he's doing a good job or not. Al manas ken, you took the job. Someone has to be able to determine whether he's doing a good job or not. So the one to whom you are responsible, he's the one to be koveya, or they're doing a good job. So even though strictly speaking it may be that it's only an Eid Echad, it may be that he's an Eger Bedover because he doesn't get along with you or whatever, but still it's L'chor itself understood that Almanasken, you took the job, that that he should have the Namanas to say whether you're doing a good job or not. There is a very fascinating tshuva that Maharam Shik has. They were at the beginning of the Reform movement, so they had Orthodox rabbis turned out not to be so medaktik in mitzvahs. So the shaila is, can they maintain, how are they going to prove that the rabbi is not, let's say a rabbi didn't wash negel vasa when he woke up in the morning, or he didn't observe, the rabbi didn't observe taras hamishpacha. But the balabatim come and they ask shaila, so the rabbi gives him a straight psak. So how can they prove that the rabbi is not an observance of taras hamishpacha? That's what they have, they sense that on their own. So the Maharam Shik has a very fascinating tshuva. He assumes that it's not part of the rabbi's job to serve as a role model. The Pashto says today it's assumed that's part of the job. That's part of the job definition. The Rebbe in yeshiva, not just to teach Torah, the Rebbe has to serve as a role model for the students. How to daven nicely, and how to be an honest person, and how to speak Lashon Nekiyah. Not just to teach the text. He's supposed to be a role model of what a nice Jew is. So the rabbi in the community is also supposed to serve as a role model. Maharam Shik assumes in his time the rabbi's job is to paskin shaylos and to give shiurim. He doesn't have to serve as a role model. So even though it's clear that the rabbi himself is not so observant, he's not a good role model, you can't fire him because of that. But then he says you can't rely on his psukim, because the Mishnah says in Pcharis Daf Lamed, Chashad al Adavah Ladonav al Amidoy, if the rabbi himself doesn't observe Taras HaMishpacha, so he has no namonis, even though he knows that you want to observe Taras HaMishpacha, so he's going to pass him to you based on what it says in Shulchan Aruch. He doesn't have namonis. So he says, but you can't fire the rabbi either, because strictly speaking you have no grounds to fire him. So he says you have to hire another dayan. You can't fire the rabbi, but you can't rely on the rabbi's psalm, because you have to salary another dayan to pass him the shaylas for you. It's a very questionable tshuva. What do you mean? The rabbi never had to serve as a role model. Pashto says that it was always the case. The rabbi always had to serve as a role model. And if the balabatim can't rely on his psukim, it means that he's unable to paskin. Maharam Shik assumes no. Since he meets Ido, he knows the halach, and he's saying over the dinim correctly, so he's able to paskin. Fine, he's able to paskin correctly, but if the balabatim halachically are not allowed to rely on his psukim, that means he's unable to function as a rabbi. If the guy, let's say a guy has a job and he gets a stroke in the middle, and he can't do the work. So of course you're not mechuyif to make that. He's not able to do the work. So what does it help? The rabbi can say good drushes, and he can paskin well, but he doesn't serve as a role model. It means that he's unable to function in his position. And if you're not allowed to listen to his psukim, because choshed al adavar, it means he's unable to function as a rabbi. So it's a very strange Maharam Shik. The paskin talk about it, let's say, a chazan also. If a chazan is established as an avaryon, so it's not proper to maintain him as a chazan. So let's say there's one, it says you have to have two Edom. The Ramah in Hilchas Tfilah says you have to have two Edom to fire a chazan, but Edis Mecheres is good. So let's say one Ed testifies that the chazan ate on Yom Kippur. And one Ed says that he was once Mechal Shabbos. So even if you have Edis Mecheres, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, the third parak, Edis Mecheres is good to pass a person the Edis. So the Ramah says Edis Mecheres is good to fire a chazan. So that's what the Malamid Lahoyel and the Maram Shik, they also talk about Edis Mecheres to establish that the rabbi should be fired, that the Malamid should be fired. So Edis Mecheres is always good. It's only no good indeed in the Fashas, but if you're talking about Dini Mammon, Edis Mecheres is good.
This idea with the Rav, who may be able to answer questions, but he did not necessarily have himself. Does this kind of come back to Hagiga, where they question Rabbi Meir from Mordi from Acher? Because, you know, Rabbi Meir said, oh, you know, I'm able to take the wheat from the chaff, basically.
The Gemara says that that's only permissible for a person on such a high level of learning like Reb Meir. The Shach writes in Yerodeh, the Bizman is that we don't have such people. So that's why the later Paskim never quote that din of Reb Meir, because it just doesn't exist, Bizman is this. By the Balabatim, they can't, of course, they can't rely. How can they tell whether the rabbi is Paskining right or wrong? They don't know. Even though we'll give a bechina to the rabbi, we see that he knows all the right answers, but the balabatim don't have the right to rely on the rabbi. He has no namonis if we know that he himself violates this area of halacha. That's why it's a problem. There is a taisus in Kiddushin Daf Yedzayin Amar Aleph has a machloikis harishonim it's a strange question. There is a din if I purchased an Eved Ivri for 6 years, and the Eved was sick for 2.5 years, and the Mamish wasn't able to do any work at all. So the din is that at the end of Shesh he goes free, and he doesn't have to make up all that time that he missed. Unless he was Chola, Yesem Ishalosh, if he was sick for more than half of the time, so then he has to make up all the time that he was sick. Not just make up the time that Yesem Ishalosh, he has to make up all the time that he was sick. So some Balei HaTesis applied this to a worker, a hire a secretary for a year, and the secretary was sick, and there, we figure out how many days there are that she has to come into work. Thanksgiving is closed, and New Year's is closed, and Christmas is closed. You figure out how many days there are. So if she was sick for more than half of the day, mom is sick, hospitalized, operation, whatever. She was sick for more than half of the days, then you're not mechuyif to pay the salary for those days. But if she was sick for less than 50% of the days, then one day in Tyson says you're mechuyif to pay the salary for all of the whole year, even though I had to pay another secretary to do the work, because she was mamish sick, she wasn't able to come in. The other day in Tysus is the more reasonable one. That's the Pashtus Rova Rishonim hold the other way, that that halacha is only by an Eved Ivri. You buy an Eved Ivri for Sheish, it may turn out that he won't lift a finger, you won't even do any work with him. But if you employ a worker to work for you, so the days that he's not able to do work, so you don't pay him any salary, you only pay him salary for the days that he does work. That's the Shaila by the Malamed. That's what the Balei HaTesis used to have, a Malamed. That's the only employee that they had was a Malamed. So what if the Malamed took sick for more than half of the time, less than half of the time that he was supposed to serve as the Malamed? So, would you say that he has the din of an Eved Ivri, or would you say that, no, Poel is different? The Pashtus is that a Malamed is totally different, because a Malamed, the Gemara says, is not allowed to take money for teaching Torah. Like a rabbi is not allowed to take a salary for teaching Torah. So the only right to take money is that it's Schar Batola. So they're really paying the Malamed for the fact that he doesn't take a job somewhere else. And then Memele is Mechuyif to teach Torah because he's free, and whoever knows how to learn, how to teach, is Mechuyif to teach for nothing. So basically the Malamedim really teach for nothing, and the Rabbanim serve in their positions for nothing. The community pays them Schar Batola that they shouldn't take another job. So even the Malamed is sick for 60% of the time, he's doing the job 100% correctly. Namely, he didn't take another job, 100%. He didn't take another job the whole year. And then he's teaching to the best of his ability. Binamon is he's teaching the Talmidim. Every time that he's healthy, he teaches Torah. So the whole concept of applying Yesem Mishalosh and Pachas Mishalosh to the Malamed is very questionable. Because he doesn't get paid for teaching Torah. He's getting paid to not take another job, which he does 100%. He didn't take another job the whole year. But I'm honest, he didn't take another job whenever he's able to. So he does teach for nothing. He teaches for nothing whenever he's healthy, even if it turns out it's only 40% of the time. So the whole Tosfos is questionable. But Tosfos had the whole discussion of an employee who was sick for less than half of the time, whether Dino Kevin Ivri or not, and they apply to a Malamed. The Malamed is a very questionable example, but it should apply or not. There is a fascinating, it's later already, there is a fascinating discussion about strikes. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva, are the rebbes and the yeshiva allowed to strike? Bittul Torah. If it means if the yeshiva is not 5 months late and the checks, are the rebbes allowed to strike? So he says sometimes there is a concept that appears in the Talmud Yerushalmi, Bittul Zeu Kiyuma. Sometimes Bittul Torah will enhance the Liman HaTorah. If the rebbes are not salaried on time, so they won't be able to have a clear mind to teach. So if striking will accomplish that, the balabatma of the yeshiva will realize that they got to cough up the money, so then it would be permissible. But sometimes Rabbi Alpid Zichron Levracha used to be a Rebbe in Tiferes Yerushalayim before he came to YU. So he said on one occasion they wanted to strike, so they asked the Rosh Yeshiva, yes, Rosh Yeshiva, how to strike? So he said, if the strike would help, I would tell you that it's mutter to strike. I don't think the strike will help. He used the paskin for them, whether they're allowed. And he has in the tshuva also, in the printed tshuva. He says, if you think the strike will help, then you have to be done. He says, it depends. If they're 1 week, if they're 2 days late, so that's not a cause to strike. That's because they're a week late or something. But if they're 5 months late, that's talk aggravating. So how can the malamed have a clear mind to teach properly? And then you have to be done, each case individually. Do you think the strike will help? He said, in Tiferes Yerushalayim, you strike from today till next year, it's not going to help. So then you're not allowed to strike. If you don't like it, go get a job somewhere else for next year. Can't quit in the middle of the year to get a job for next year. So there is a fascinating discussion in Eretz Yisrael in the 1920s, 1930s, there was an insistence on Avodah Ivrit, that they shouldn't have Avodah Zarah. They shouldn't have non-Jews. They shouldn't employ Arabs. The Arabs agreed to work for a penny a day, and the Jews wanted $100 a day. So everybody wanted to hire Arabs in all the businesses. So the Jews in Eretz Yisrael, they insisted you have to have Avodah Ivrit, and you shouldn't be allowed to have Avodah Zarah, which meant Arab employees. So even though there was a difference 100 times as much, the price of the difference in salary was tremendous. So on one occasion, there was so they made a union. The Jews made a union, and when the factory hired Arabs, so they made a strike, and none of the Jews were working, and they were slashing tires and smashing windows and beating people up. And they were making a whole tumult. So this was written up in the newspapers. And a lot of the Jews who were involved were religious Jews. The religious Jews also involved. So Rabbi Chana Vassman was a holy tzaddik. He lived in Europe. And he read this in the Aguda newspaper. So he wrote a letter, an open letter to the religious Jews who live in Eretz Yisrael, that this is a goyish shtick. You're not allowed to do this, to slash tires and smash windows and beat people up. This is against the halacha. If you don't like it, go get a job somewhere else. But you're not allowed to do this. And he made a big fuss about this. So they say that the Chazon Ish at that time, I forgot the dates already, must have been in 1930, the Chazon Ish lived in Eretz Yisrael. So he sent a letter to Rabbi Chana Vassman, my dear friend. There are rabbis who live here in Eretz Yisrael. We know what's going on. Why do you have to stick your 2 cents in? The workers are right. There's a din yakoifim al hatzdokim. That if the boss is making a fortune of money, he has a factory, he's making millions of dollars, and he's not paying the employees. And the din is that you have a right, the din is he's supposed to give the job to the Jews as opposed to the Arabs, even if the Jews are asking for more salary. They're not asking to get rich, they're just asking for a reasonable salary. They give the Arabs peanuts, because the Arabs are prepared to work for peanuts. And the Jews ask for a reasonable salary. So he said the workers have a right. The Gemara has Ovid in Ishdina Lanavshe. Sometimes you have a right to take the law into your own hands. And he said, the Yes to Shaila. The workers in Eretz Yisrael, the religious workers, they Yes to Shaila. And it was told to them, they didn't ask him, but they Yes to other Rabbanim. And they were told that it's permissible to slash the tires. So please don't stick your 2 cents in. So there's a whole chapter about this in the biography of the Chazon Ish, very fascinating, called the Be'er Ador. The old biography is a 5-volume biography. Today nobody has time to read 5 volumes, so they rewrote the biography of the Chazon Ish in 1 volume now. But in the old biography, they have long essays, long chapters on every issue that he was involved in with all the Marmikaimis. That's a very fascinating chapter. Okay. I left out some of the other sections of Marmikaimis. I guess you're going to have to do them on your own.